are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Karina in Bobbywood, only on LA Talk Radio.
I am Karina Fraley, and you are listening to Karina in Mommywood, the show for mothers of all ages and all stages of motherhood. And today we are going to be talking college. There's a lot to consider, and here with us today are our experts and contributors on the Mommywood.com website. They are college counselors Melanie Rome and Rebecca Joseph, and they are going to be talking about everything from the application and admission process to choosing the right school, to affording the right school, especially in today's economy. And also here with us is parenting coach and licensed marriage and family therapist Betty Alkazian, who is going to be talking a little bit about the emotional and psychological process that families go through during this transitional time. Also, we're going to be opening up the phone lines in a little bit here if you want to call in and ask any of our experts questions. The phone number is 323-203-0815, and you should unblock your phone. So if you're calling from a blocked number, dial *82 before you dial the number. It'll give you a better chance of having your call answered. Also, if you want to go back and listen to the show or listen to any of our other shows, you can log on to mommywood.com. That's MOMMYWOOD.com, and you can listen to shows, watch videos, subscribe to the newsletter if you want to stay up to date. It's free. You can keep up to date with what's going on in Mommywood. Now, this is usually the part of the show where we call in and check in with my daughter, Stormy, who is a freshman at Duke. But today, she actually happens to be here. She's home for the Thanksgiving holiday weekend, and she is going to be weighing in on her whole experience with the application process and her transition into dorm life and college life. Welcome to the show, Stormy.
Hello, Mom. How are you?
I'm good. You had a nice Thanksgiving?
I did. Glad to be home in warm weather.
Yeah, and it was actually rainy and cold here, but
it's warm.
Comparatively speaking.
Yes, yes.
So, are you having a nice break?
I am having a nice break. I'm seeing some friends from high school and catching up with everyone, seeing how everyone's adjusting to college. It's fun.
And you go back tomorrow.
I do, on a red eye. That should be lots of fun. I have a paper due, my first class. When I get back, I'm handing in a paper.
So. And you actually had a paper due when you flew in.
Yep, a paper due at midnight, the night I got home.
Midnight Eastern time.
Eastern time. I was working on it until 9 Western time.
Okay. All right, Storm. Well, we are going to be talking to you a little bit later on. But let's get started introducing our guests. Melanie, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm a college admissions counselor. I just completed getting my master's in school counseling and decided to go full-time into the business of helping kids get into college.
And Rebecca Joseph.
I am an assistant professor at Cal State LA, where I train urban teachers by day, and by afternoon and night, I help kids and their families have their dreams come true by finding the right choice. And I had the good fortune of working with Stormy.
Yes, you did. You did. Rebecca helped Stormy out a bit. And Betty Alkazian, welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you here.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do for those who don't know.
I work with parents with kids of all ages, from birth, even prenatal, all the way up to launching. So I'm here, and I'm also the mom of three girls myself.
And they are not college age. No, they're younger.
I have a senior in high school.
Oh, you're going through
it
now.
So it's very relevant to me, yes.
So very, very appropriate that you're here. So, Betty, why don't we start talking a little bit just about the process. You're now starting the process emotionally with your daughter. And how is she handling it?
Interesting question. A lot of times I think there's a lot of denial going on. She sort of avoids it. And I think in some ways that's how she communicates to me that this is hard, without actually saying the words, "Mom, this is really hard. I'm scared." So I try to be as supportive as I can be without getting angry and frustrated because I'm organized and I want it done now. So we have different styles, and I have to really respect her style.
Got it. Now, Rebecca, tell us a little bit, what is the advice that you give, the first piece of advice that you give to somebody when they call you up and say, help, we need help?
I walked into a house once, and the kid looked at me and said, here comes the dream buster. And I said, I'm not a dream buster, I'm a dream realizer. And so the first thing I say is, we're going to help give you choices. And that I have to listen to what you want, Stormy in her case, and the mom and the dad and the family, just to see what the whole family's decision is, because the family's paying for it and the child is living it. And so,
yeah, it's a big decision. Melanie, what do you say to your clients when they first come in?
I always like to meet with the family first, because I believe the decision of going to college and where to go to college is primarily a family decision.
Now, when we started out the whole application process, it was really overwhelming. There are so many options. You know, there's public, private, community college. There's all different kinds of choices that you can make, and there's so many things that you take into consideration. How many schools do you recommend that a student apply to?
I think it's complicated because right now there's what I call the trickle-down effect going on, is that it's so tough getting into the top colleges. The UCs are so competitive and other colleges, so you just don't know those top kids where they're going to go. And so then they apply to schools underneath, where if they get into their top choice school, they don't need that other space that they've taken away from somebody else, and it trickles down right now. So the B kid, for example, is really caught in the middle.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would say that the choices for B students are not as great as they used to be, given the fact that the budget considerations that are happening in the state of California right now, where they are limiting resources for our state university system.
Now, would you say that it's true that children who go to private schools, that the kids who go to private schools have a better chance, or is it actually the opposite? Because I think that the big myth is, you know, if you go to private school, if I send my kid to private school and I spend a fortune in high school, they'll be able to get into whatever college they want.
I think it's a question of readiness. I don't think it's a question of talent of the kid. I just think that at private schools, a lot of them start them getting ready earlier, and I'm assuming that's what Stormy experienced, is that they start them in 9th and 10th grade on planning what they're going to do with their testing and going and visiting colleges, and they have a roadmap
right in
place for them, whereas in public schools, there's just a larger load for the public school counselor, and they don't often get to all the kids, and so sometimes they get a late start, and so sometimes there's a disadvantage. But I would say colleges like all kinds of kids, and they want diversity, and so what do you think, Melanie?
I agree with that. I think, from what I understand, when they go through the applications, the admissions counselors are looking to form a class. And so that's going to include students of all backgrounds and varying grade point averages and SAT scores, because they're looking to make a diverse group of students.
Now, can you clarify in terms of the UC schools? Is there an actual, can you just clarify what the actual percentage of in-state kids that the UCs have to take? Is there?
The UCs were designed to take anywhere from 8 to 12% of graduating seniors. It has nothing to do with the out-of-state numbers. That's the in-state numbers. And they could fill their class over and over again with that percentage right now. And this year, they're going to have the highest number of applications ever.
And it's tougher to get into the
UCs. It will be one of
the
toughest years.
Well, UCLA, for example, received last year 35,000 applications for freshman admission. That's amazing.
And they admit how many, would you say?
It's around 2,800?
Yeah, I think about 2,800.
2,800.
And how much of it is, would you say, are grades, and how much of it are SAT scores?
For what college?
And ACTs.
Depends.
If we're talking about the UCs, they look first at not necessarily grades, but the how rigorous the student's course load was. Did they take a lot of honors and AP courses, for example? And then following that, then they look at test scores. So really what's probably more important between test scores and classes are the classes. You know, are they taking classes that are challenging?
I so happen to have here, and I can get it to anybody, they've published the 14 criteria that they use in evaluating kids for the UCs.
Oh, that's great. Why don't you run through them?
Sure. I mean,
I know
the majority of them are just what Melanie said. It's the it's several things about academics.
Right.
I mean, they want to know the academic rigor based on the school that you go to. So they're not going to judge a kid from Harvard Westlake the same they're going to judge a kid who goes to a charter school or who goes to a public school and doesn't have the opportunities. They judge them within the realm of their own environment. But they have to compare them, unfortunately, and they use the SATs or the ACTs. But they look at the activities that they've engaged in, they look at some of the contexts of their lives, and that's why they include essays. The UCs, with those 35,000 applications UCLA got here, they got 2 essays per kid that they read. I mean, they actually really want to get to know the child. So, I mean, they look at a whole range of factors. And if anybody wants them, I can get that for them.
Okay, great. And they can get more information to find you on mommywood.com. And also, now, when you set out to start the whole process, organization is very important, yes? What are some of the organizational tips that you give your clients?
Prioritize by deadline. Decide with your counselor what colleges you're going to apply to. Go online, find out when the applications are due, and then start deciding which ones you're going to work on first.
Now, everything has become much easier, obviously, over the past few years with the online applications.
It's a thing of beauty. It really is. But then it's challenging because, as Stormy knows, they all have supplements. And so you have to also just organize. I believe that you organize your applications before you even start, and you just look for overlapping themes in what you're going to have to do so that you don't have to keep on reinventing the wheel with new essays or new topics.
Absolutely. I agree with that. A lot of schools, for example, take the common application. So you don't have to complete a different application for each school. But even if they do take the common application, then they have each school has what they call a supplement. So
the Why You, Why Me essay is very popular. Why do you think you're a good match for us? And I guess they really care. It's like a dating service for colleges. But I think also what's really important, I mean, and I'll go back to the dating service for colleges. I mean, it's really a match. It's finding a match.
Right.
And so sometimes a kid knows that there's a school that's right for me. And the question that I'm sure Melanie has to deal with me is, actually, is that true? I mean, based on the qualifications of the child, does it match really the realm of possibility for
the
college?
Well, before I get started helping a student, I have them fill out a questionnaire.
Yeah.
And, you know, For some kids, school size is important. For others, you know, whether the school is in an urban or rural setting. There are lots of factors that go into finding a good match for the student.
So to go back to your question, which I don't know if we answered, was how many schools are on your list? I mean, the goal of what this process is narrowing down the parameters of what you're looking for, so that you can get a list anywhere from 8 to 16. I mean, it just really depends on there's no right number. It's just what do you like and then what are the chances. I think you have to have some schools that are a challenge and a reach for you and some schools that are a match for you and then some, I call them a sure thing. I mean, you need to have choices come March or April.
Right. Because every school, even if your child has dreamed, you know, whatever, Notre Dame, some big school that they wanted to go to and they've always pictured themselves there and they know that they're right for the school, but if, you know, for whatever reason, it's actually not a good match, you don't want your child to just have applied to one or two colleges and they get stuck with no options.
It's not even a good match. I mean, you want to talk about UCLA, they turned down 90% of applications, but they could have filled an equally good class probably 3 or 4 times.
Right.
I mean, the talent pool is so strong.
It's tough out there,
especially
now.
In California, I think.
You would say it's tougher in California? Yeah. Now, this SAT grading has actually changed. The scoring, the way that they score SATs has changed since back in the day. Can somebody explain that? Melanie, do you want to explain how that's changed?
Well, we've added a writing section. I shouldn't say we. It wasn't me. It was College Board. Added a writing section, and that now accounts for 800 additional points. And so that's how it's changed since when you and I took the test. So now it's out of the best possible, a perfect score would be 2,400.
And if you remember when you were taking the SAT, there were those awful analogies. This is to this, is that is to that.
Right.
Those are gone.
Bye-bye.
Because I mean, California has a lot of power. And California has affected the SATs greatly in saying we want critical reading skills, and that's why they have more reading embedded in the test. And then you have the newcomer. It's not a newcomer in the rest of the country, but the ACT is coming in and storm busting through California and other parts of the country. And
can you explain the ACT a little bit?
Go right, Melanie.
Well, the ACT is more a test of a student's knowledge, where the SAT is a test of the student's reasoning skills. So a student who may not be such a great test taker might do better on the ACT, where it's a test of your knowledge, as opposed to the SAT, which measures your ability to
do critical thinking. Well, I mean, the thing about it is, if you're not a strong test taker, it's not an indication of how smart you are. It's just an indication of how well you take a test.
Right.
And I don't know if maybe you can help. I mean, because there's such stress on these kids to do well on tests, and they internalize it. And
now, do you recommend taking both the SAT and the ACT? And I know it depends.
I mean, I work with a couple test prep companies, and what they recommend and I agree with is you start off preparing for both, and then you see which one you like better and you do better on, and then right. you just focus on that. Because I have kids who are doing both series of tests. Their senior fall is a challenge, along with those rigorous courses they're taking and their applications. Life is challenging for kids today.
Absolutely.
I agree with that. Very challenging.
And would you recommend preparation? Test preparation for the SATs, the PSATs?
Well, I don't do it, but I have I see kids who really benefit from it, because it's a psychological process, and that you need to get your confidence for doing these tests,
right.
but also there are skills that you can develop.
Absolutely. I think with Stormy, she was never a strong standardized test taker. Sorry, when you were younger, you weren't. Don't nod. Don't look at me and be bewildered. Oh, you weren't. No. But she actually did take SAT prep, and she was actually, I think she actually benefited a lot from it. Stormy, would you say that you benefited from the preparation?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like Rebecca said, a lot of it is psychological. A lot of it is, you know, oh, I'm not prepared for this. And you're sitting next to someone who's been taking like private tutoring sessions for the last year, and you know they're in boot camp for the SAT, and if you haven't opened a book, you know it's nerve-wracking. But at the same time, like those little tricks, I mean, I think the most important thing with like the whole college application process for me is to just, it's really hard not to take anything personally. You know, like they said so many times, they can fill their class so many times with people equally as talented, but you know, even if it's just numbers on a page, you know, and you see that, and it's your personal performance, it's hard not to take that personally. So whether or not that's being smart or knowing the tricks of a test, it's hard to differentiate in your mind, which is why I think tutoring is so beneficial, because it does teach you those little tricks, those little ins and outs of the test that just kind of, like, calm you down, especially timing, if you take, like, real standardized testing in simulated situations rather than just, you know.
I think, but also what the kids have to understand is that there are choices for them, and they will wind up at a good place, and if they don't like where they are, they can change. That nothing is ever fixed, but it's a very psychologically dramatic experience.
Absolutely.
Going through college applications right now.
And I think also that you have to take into consideration the big picture. It's going to be 4 years of your life, and in the biggest picture your entire life, it's not your entire life, but in those 4 years it's a chunk, and it's an important, I think, developmental, you know, part of your life. And I think that you also,
well, I think it's an educational experience on many levels,
on many.
Not just academically, but socially, emotionally, psychologically, all that's going on.
And I think you have to,
when you're in college.
I really wanted Stormy to go to UCLA. She felt that the classes were too big for her. I'm sorry. I won't divulge much all of your information, but you know, I wanted to keep her close to home, and
that's a major factor that goes in play. And when I meet with families, when preferably they're juniors, you need to learn the dynamic in the family to actually understand, are there financial considerations where the UCs become a real necessity, because they are the best financial deal around, along with the Cal States. But you have to also learn the power play in the family. Is a mom going to be able to determine whether or not the kid has the geographic range of leaving California? And how much, there are a lot of parameters. We have a huge community college system in California that is growing and growing and growing. and it has a lot to do with just the culture and community that the kids grow up in.
That's true, and I think that for some kids, the option of not attending a four-year college should definitely be considered. Some kids just would benefit better from going to a community college for 2 years and then transferring to a four-year school. Each kid is an individual, and those decisions about going to college depend on the many factors involving the individual student.
And I think the emotional level, I know that for, you know, Stormy was really, she got into Duke and she said she's going, and we had visited and she had loved it. but I said to her, you know, it's really far. You're going to be far from home. And she wanted to go, and so there she went. She went off to Duke, and, you know, we're very happy, and she's very happy there. But tell us a little bit about the emotional transition for you leaving home.
Well, I was all gung-ho. I'm going across the country. I'm going to get, you know, my little East Coast education. 2 weeks before it was time to leave, I started to freak out.
You panicked.
Oh, I panicked. I panicked, and, you know, it was the distance. It was, you know, being far away from friends. It was also just that time where everyone realizes they're going to have to go and kind of start over, and you're like, oh, wait, I've just built my whole life. And now I have to move and make new friends. And then I got there, and I didn't want my mom to leave.
I was there for eight days. I was there, and she was Facebooking me. The child who said
mom's my Facebook friend.
She threatened that the minute she left the house, she was going to unfriend me from Facebook. And then we get to Duke 2 weeks later, and in the middle, I was at the hotel and she was at the dorm, and in the middle of the night, she's Facebook IMing me. Are you there?
Oh yeah, you know, and it's hard because I think like once you're finally out there, it's not only that you know it's far, it's that you feel it's far. It's far. You can't go home. You can't hop in your car.
You know, I think we have a call. Let's take a call. Let's see who's there. Hi, caller. Are you there?
Yes, I'm there.
Hi, who's this?
My name's Gail.
Oh, hi, Gail. How are you?
Okay.
Do you have a question for one of our experts?
I do.
Go ahead.
It's either for Rebecca or for Melanie or both of them. I just wanted to see if they talk a little bit about the financial aid process and the best way to go about it and, you know, what's out there and the best way to approach it.
I took a course on this last year because there's a great program at UCLA, a college certificate program.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to fill out the form, and I didn't get any aid. But
no. But what you, I took the same program, but we won't talk about my grade.
Yeah. But I really recommend the book that we used for our class, and it's from the Fast Web.
Okay.
Fast Gold, and it walks you through the entire process, and it has a chapter for everything. It's in user-friendly terminology. It will explain how to do the federal financial aid forms and the deadlines. It will explain to you, and it will send you every day different scholarships that are available for your child to apply for. It will explain to you the difference between financial aid that's offered through the university versus through grants for scholarships. I mean, there are huge ranges of funding out there, and it's certainly not in my area of expertise, but it's certainly in my area of expertise to refer you to that book.
Well, tell me the name of the book again.
Sure, it's called Fast Web. You can go just do a Google search for Fast Web, and you'll get on their website, and you can order their book. And I get no money for this. I just used it for my class and loved it.
That's great. Okay. And parents should also know to plan ahead that they're going to have copies of their taxes for the year and everything. And that sort of becomes an emotional. I mean, it becomes overwhelming for the parent as well with everything else that they're dealing with,
right.
And they have to get everything together early on.
Melanie,
I just wanted to add one thing. There's a website, I believe it's edgov. .com that also provides a lot of information about financial aid and the different kinds of financial aid.
And collegeboard.com is great. We did everything through collegeboard.com, and they send you reminders and notices, and you can sort of try to keep up with everything on your account right online as well.
What you need to understand is that this is a very unusual year because of the economy, colleges' endowments have gone down, and so they're not going to have as much aid. But they're going to do everything they can to point. That's once you get in and you get in your financial aid information, their job is not to make you not come. Their job is to figure out a way for your child to be there.
Absolutely. And if you're talking about schools like Stanford and Harvard, I mean, what Harvard, your family can make up to
$180,000
a year, and if you get in,
10%.
Yeah. So it's you know, you definitely should not let that dissuade you from applying anywhere. Obviously, the reality is, it's going to have to be paid for, and you may have to make some choices at the end of the day.
And then you contact colleges at the end, and you can have them compare packages, and then you really try to explain to your child going into it that this is the biggest gift you're ever going to give them, and it costs a lot of money.
And that's for sure.
No, it really is. I mean, it's tremendous. I mean, I don't know how families do it. And so that you're going to have to take in the financial considerations of looking at the UCs versus a private to figure out the best way to make it work for you.
But right, you don't want them coming out with all these loans at the end, too.
Right. Stormy, you were going to say something?
Yeah, and, you know, being at Duke, I know that, you know, when you get there, freshman year, you already have your financial aid package or whatever you have worked out, but you are constantly being swarmed with emails from people in departments that want to give you money. They're only asking you to fill out an application if it's something you're interested in. You know, right now I'm in the process of applying for a research grant for the summer. So once you get into these schools, I think it's also important when you're considering what college to go to, what opportunities do they have with funding once you're already in? How much money can they give you to study abroad? How much money can they give you to go do a research project over the summer? Things like that. And what kind of grants can you get from academic performance, from interests you have in extracurriculars once you're at school?
I mean, I know that Harvard and the other schools that implemented their new financial aid packages required the kids work because they believe that kids need to understand how much a commitment the family is providing for this and that they need to contribute.
Right.
So.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks for calling.
I will check out that book. Yeah, okay, bye. Thank you.
Bye. Thanks, caller. And if you need any information, if listeners, you can log on to mommywood.com, and we'll put everything up there, all of the websites that we're talking about today, so that you can have that as a resource. And I just wanted to say that, you know, as a parent, you want to also have your child, if you're not going to be able to afford it, if your child is going to have to take out student loans or, you know, they really, you have to consider whether or not you're going to want to carry these loans around because they don't go away. And there are many times, you know, there's lots of people out there that are still paying off their student loans.
I'm still paying off loans.
I know.
Right.
But I got a job, you know, as an inner city teacher, and they got forgiven. So there's certain paths also that you can take to have loans.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
Yeah,
great. And I want to also tell Karina, a great website. So I'm glad you're doing it.
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
Okay,
take
bye.
Care. Bye-bye. So, you know, it's funny, just a little anecdote. I was... A man came to pick something up that from my house. He was delivering something from my house, and we started talking. And he was telling me about his kids, and he said, "Oh yeah, you know, I have four kids," and you know, he was not from here. And I said, "Oh, how old are they?" And he said, "Well, I have a couple in college, and one's, you know, in school in Ohio, and the other one's in Boston." And I said, "Oh," and he said, and so the conversation would go, he said, "Yeah, you know, I don't know, my daughter, she went to Boston, I told her not to go, I thought it was too far, but she said, oh, you know, Dad, it's, you know, they're it's free, and they're it's, you know, it's a good school." And I said, "Oh, what's the name?" He's like, "Oh, it's Harvard. I don't know. I don't know anything about schools." And I thought, you know, I mean, in a way, it almost it melted my heart because here was this man, you know, who had obviously come here from a different country and who had obviously done something right because his daughter had gotten into Harvard. And it was a little sad because he almost couldn't even appreciate the huge accomplishment that it was. He said, "You know, I don't know. I kept telling her it was too far, you know, but it was free, but it was too far." So, you know, the opportunities are out there. And if you work hard, and I just want to encourage people, no matter what socioeconomic, you know, background you come from or whatever, you know, background you come from, if you work hard and, you know, definitely, and go out there and apply. Because
I go around to schools and I do free workshops, you know, in the inner city areas and different areas with underrepresented kids. And if you can get them to fulfill the academic requirements and to apply, there will be colleges that are desperate to have them.
Right. Absolutely.
It's just, that's where the family work begins really early. It's just having a family that's willing to let their child experience things that they may not have experienced themselves.
Now, can we talk a little bit about early decision and...
Keep your fingers crossed.
That? Yeah. And is it a good idea? Is it a good idea? Melanie?
I think the jury's out for me as far as that's concerned. I have... For students that are absolutely 100% certain that there's a certain school that they want to go to, I think early decision is certainly a good option. I hate to lock in a kid early in the decision-making process. You never know what financial aid packages might come their way from other schools. And also, a lot happens from the time that an application is submitted until it's time to make the decision in May. There are a lot of changes that occur in the life of the student, and they may change their mind.
about where they want to go, about leaving home. And also, it's a good idea, if you can afford it, if it's feasible, to visit the schools that you are applying to.
Well, for early decision, I definitely recommend it, yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I have a lot of clients who are going to be finding out in 2 weeks, and, you know, keep your fingers crossed. But they have fallen in love with colleges, and, you know, sometimes they know. And it's very rare that I've had a kid who's gotten in early that's ever regretted going there. But those are kids who have matured, I mean, who are ready. I mean, sometimes there's competitive pressure to apply early, and that's different than a kid who finds Northwestern has the program that kid has to have. But what happens is sometimes they don't get in. And schools like NYU and Northwestern, they can accept you or reject you. They don't defer you and put you in the regular pot for the spring. So what happens is the kids have...
So then that's out at that point.
It's gone. It's over. And so the kid has to have other choices. And I'm telling you, I don't think they go on in life just thinking ever, you know, that they got rejected from that school. They begin to remember that they're happy where they are.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of different choices. Stormy applied to many different schools with many different choices, and they all sort of had different criteria.
Yeah.
And
and just for me, I wanted to go to Duke. That was my first choice. That was my dream school. But you know, Duke's a reach for everyone, and so because of like the competitive nature of the atmosphere I was in academically, I didn't feel like I wanted to get my SAT scores up before I decided to apply ED, because, you know, you have a testing schedule. So I wanted to get my SAT scores up, so I didn't apply ED anywhere, even though I knew Duke was my first choice. But then with the numbers I had at the time, it was time to decide if I was going to apply early decision. I was looking at another school, and I was thinking, hey, with these numbers, I really like this school. I think I can get in. Why don't I just apply ED? Because I was getting nervous. I was like, oh, no, I'm not going to get in anywhere if I don't apply ED, and there's all this pressure. Well, lo and behold, I got into Duke regular decision, and if I had applied early decision to that school, who knows where
you
I would be.
You would have been, yeah.
Right. So don't sell yourself short thinking you're not going to get in anywhere. You know, apply where you want to apply. If you have your dream school and the numbers aren't there and you don't feel comfortable applying early decision, don't.
Yeah, there's a lot of just peer pressure from some kids to apply early, and it does. It does, in some cases, double your chances of getting in to a school. But you have to go to that school when you get in.
You have to be willing to go.
You have to be willing to go. And I think if, just like you, if they're just worried about it, they need to wait.
Yeah, you don't want to play the what-if game.
That's right.
You don't want to get into that second-choice school that you applied ED to and then be like, well, what if I had just applied there and what if I had gotten in? Because, you know, you never know.
Betty, let's talk a little bit about some things that you can do to help your child and also the parents, because the whole family and the siblings, you know, Stormy has a little sister, and it just becomes overwhelming for the entire family, this process, on many levels. Can you just give us a little advice?
Absolutely. I think that from the minute our kids are born, we fall madly in love. It's all designed for us to fall madly in love with them, and then every step along the way is designed for them to go away from us. And
right.
Until ultimately, it's time for them to launch and go to college. So everybody has mixed emotions about it. And even though the teen years are designed to begin for kids to begin to find themselves and to sort of reject their parents' values and reject their parents on many levels to find themselves and become comfortable with themselves, they are really frightened. And their parents are still that safety network, and so they sort of ride this fence of I love you, I hate you, I love you, I hate you, I want to leave you.
Oh, we rode that fence, yeah.
And so we all have to learn to respect each other's process. We also have to learn to not take everything so seriously and personally, because we're all having an emotional process. And, you know, it's not just the kids going through this. It's the parents saying, I love you, I hate you, I love you, I hate you.
It's very tough. I mean, Stormy, one day we were outside and we were talking to one of our neighbors, Simone, and, you know, within, you know, 5 minutes, Stormy was, you know, I can't wait to leave Simone. Simone, you have no idea how sick I am of being here. I can't wait to go off to college. And then, you know, 3 minutes later, it's, I don't want to go to college, Simone. I don't want to leave. And so Stormy went in the house and Simone said, what is wrong with that kid? I said, you know, it's just we've been doing this for the past few months and it's just been like this total roller coaster. And it was obvious, you know, because I had actually spoken to Betty. So she'd clued me in actually over a year ago as to kind of the process. But
I think you're really lucky that Stormy was articulate enough to say, I don't want to go, I'm scared. Sometimes our kids use their behavior to tell us that they're
scared. Oh, there was some of that, too.
I think parents need to be watching for both.
Right. Yeah. And so what can you do? I mean, you sit your kid down and sort of say, I know what you're going through. What?
I think we all need to be patient. I think we need to sit and try to talk to one another and say, this is hard, isn't it? Or this is scary, or I'm scared. Maybe if the parent starts with his or her own feelings and say, I'm really scared, I'm nervous about you being far away, and you know, what are you going to do when this happens? And I'm a mama bear and I want to protect my cubs. And sometimes if we allow ourselves to be vulnerable, maybe we are modeling and we're allowing our kids to let themselves be a little bit vulnerable and admit their own fears as well.
Right. I mean, I remind parents all the time that the kid is 17.
Yeah.
Sometimes you look at them and you think you're like, they're talking to another adult. I mean, they're talking to a 17-year-old. I mean,
right.
They're talking to someone who, you know, thinks the world is beautiful one day and then hates it the next. I mean, this being a teenager.
Emotional, yeah.
Emotional roller coasters just of being a teenager. And so we're putting a huge amount of pressure.
Yeah, before we left and Stormy said, you know, you're going to have to leave me there. You know, you're leaving me there. I said, yes, I know, but you will be back. You know, and again, you know, at the time during the process when she was actually there, and I think that it really, you know, she realized, oh, she's staying and mommy's going home. You know, I think that she, well, I know, she said to me, you know, you should not have let me come this far. You were the mom. I'm a minor. I can't even get myself my own, you know, emergency health care.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
She was 17 when she left. Yeah. And I said, you know, I told you it was very hard. You know, we had a hard emotional transition. It was hard for her to leave. But, you know, it definitely, I think that if you're in a situation like that, it's worth taking into consideration. I don't think that we would have necessarily done anything different now, these months into it. But if you have, you know, there are Stormy's roommate, I think, actually.
Oh,
her, well, her family actually said, you know, they're from the East Coast. And they said, you can only go so far away from home. What was it, Stormy? How far was it?
She was from the Northeast. She's from New Jersey, and she could not look at any schools in the Midwest or the West at all. It was going to be East Coast for her.
And I mean, that's something that you want to take into consideration, the expense, also the location of the school, you know, how often the child is going to want to come home.
The one plane rule is very common here.
The one plane rule, but you know, it's almost impossible to get a one plane rule to Duke. I mean, on the we one flight, she got nonstop there, but really it's tough. And it's a tough transition, and for the short little, you know, the short vacations, like we were scrambling to get her a flight that was going to work for Thanksgiving, and it gets expensive, and well, so cost is also an issue.
But that also factors into the cost of college education, is the travel expenses if your child is going to school out of state.
I think the most important thing is the colleges were designed for this, and so they are. You're not the first kid who's separated from your mom, but it's the first time that you've gone through it. So there are a lot of supports and services on campuses.
I agree with that. And there are some schools that are especially, I call them student-centered schools. There's a book called Colleges That Change Lives. That's a wonderful book, and it sort of gives you an idea of what it's like at a school where attention is really paid to the individual student, and that there's a lot of support.
And the other thing is, you go off and you think you're leaving your family, but honestly, I mean, I've made another family among my dorm mates, and I miss them. I want to go back to Bassett. I miss Bassett.
Well, I think also part of the whole emotional thing is the back and forth, because you know when you come home, you know you miss being at school, and then when you're at school, you miss being at home, and so you know that also was kind of is it hard for you to come and go, Stormy?
Yeah, I was actually talking about this yesterday. It's kind of impossible because you're happy to be in both places and you're sad to leave both places because you have people that you care about on both coasts for me.
So definitely location is something to take into consideration. If really it's not going to be feasible for your child to come home, you know, at more than once a year or something, is that something that your family can handle? For us, you know, we have a little one and we wanted Stormy to be, you know, part of her sister's life, and so to come back often, and also, you know, Stormy has grandparents here, and so for us it was important that she come back, and it was something that honestly I thought, oh, distance, but the logistics of it, I really didn't even take into, I think, as much consideration as I would encourage other parents too. Definitely think about it. And I know that, you know, it's an emotional thing, but definitely stick it out because it gets easier. I know that Stormy has a friend who, you know, is at school here locally and was living in the dorms. And, you know, I mean, he lives, you know, what, maybe a 20-minute, 30-minute drive from home or from school. And he actually, I think he threw in the towel pretty early on because he could not stand to be away from home. He moved out of the dorm.
Yeah, he's probably bringing his laundry home every weekend anyway. You didn't do that, did you, Stormy? Yes. Did you bring home your laundry? Okay, good.
So. I have three sons, and my oldest son went to UC Santa Barbara and was home every single weekend of his freshman year. So
really? And
I think the separation process is different for everyone. Yeah. For him, that was fine. For my second son, it wasn't. He wanted to be away from home. So I think for each child, it's different.
We have to consider our kids' personalities, and we have to consider our family dynamics, but we also have to prepare our kids. And we have to watch our own behavior and how attached we are and what we might be holding on to. If we're doing their laundry up until the minute they leave, we're not preparing them adequately.
That was not a problem at our house. Wasn't Stormy. I was not doing her laundry. Well, I think maybe what took Stormy a little bit by surprise was I'm a very protective mom. I was a very hands-on mom, and then I put her on the plane and I dropped her off, you know, and I decorated her dorm room for her and I went shopping but I left. I said, you know, you're doing this. You know, she was crying. I don't want to stay. I said, bye-bye, you're staying. And she said, you of all people, you're leaving me here? And I said, yeah. And I said, you know what? All the information that you have to be okay on your own is in your head. I know. I have taught it to you. We have prepared for this day. Whether you think you were paying attention or not, it's in there. And when you need it, tap into it, because I'm on the next plane out. Bye. Love you. Goodbye.
That is one of the most important things that we do for our kids, and that is to encourage them and to tell them we are their biggest fans and that we know they're ready and that they are capable, and to really encourage them rather than having our own pity parties about losing our babies. We have to say, I'm your biggest fan.
I mean, and the big, you know, the kid who couldn't, you know, she was not allowed to go to the mall by herself. She was in New York two weeks after getting to Duke. She went off with a focus group from school. She went up to New York, and suddenly, you know, she's like, I'm in New York, I'm by myself. And she was fine. And I think that was it was really neat for her to see, you know, oh, I really can, you know, I can make it on my own. I know how to take care of myself. And, you know, but if my mom's there, all I have to do is call home and... Right? Yeah.
And in a way, almost going away made me want to cling to my mom more than I had ever wanted to cling to her before. When I was here, like my senior year of high school, all I wanted was more freedom. All I wanted was to get away from mom and get away from home and go prove myself. And then like the time came and I freaked out. But now I feel so, I mean, I love school. I love being far away. I miss my mom. I miss my family. But we're all okay. And I'm having a great time and I'm getting a good education. So...
They're really, you know, by the way, away at college very little. I mean, a semester is 14 or 15 weeks. I mean,
oh, yeah.
So they're gone.
This one has been home a couple times.
Yeah, they're gone 30 weeks. There's like 22 weeks
of their. Pathetic.
It's amazing.
Yeah, she'll be home in a few weeks again. But so, Stormy, actually, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about dorm life.
Oh,
tell
dorm
us
living.
What it's like going from having your own room and bathroom to sharing with. How many girls do you share with?
28. Four toilets, three showers, lots of hair everywhere. dorm life, it's an adjustment. For me, the hall bathroom, I was just freaking out. I bought these little dress towel things in preparation for walking back and forth from the showers. And I'm on a co-ed hall. And I don't have brothers, so that was quite an adjustment.
Co-ed bathroom?
It's not a co-ed bathroom, but it's a co-ed hall. So boys, you walk out of the bathroom, and they're like boys like playing basketball down the hallway. It's ridiculous. They're really rambunctious. But it's really fun. It's an adjustment, to say the least. You have to be able to negotiate with people and, you know, communicate with your roommate. Set boundaries. If you don't want someone to eat your food, don't tell them that they're welcome to it. just be honest.
Because one day all your pudding will be gone.
Your pudding will be gone. You'll come home, you'll open the fridge, you won't have anything to eat. And they'll be like, what? You said I could help myself. And then you can't really get mad at them. So, you know, just make sure your boundaries are clear. I think the important thing is to, you know, be nice, but you don't always have to be, you know, trying to be like your host to your roommate. You're not your roommate's hostess. You're their roommate. So there need to be boundaries. But college life is fun. It's fun to live with everyone your age, and it's a good experience. So
I think that the kids that have the struggle in the fall, I mean, a lot of kids struggle, and it's a normal adjustment period. it's just trying to make new groups of friends. And so when they're looking to choose a college, I think they really, really need to seriously look at the dorm life. Where do kids meet each other? I mean, what are the activities? How hard is it for them to join? Because that's a hard transition to make from being part of a big group here to having to make new friends. But Stormy's making people friends in her dorm. I mean, in the cafeteria. I think you're, through your focus groups, I mean, you found places.
Actually, I'm in... Also, when you get into college, look into the different little, you know, programs they have for you freshman year. I'm in a focus program, which is basically they get a bunch of kids together who are interested in the same things, and we take classes together.
And that's who you went to New York with.
I went to New York with them. We stayed in a lovely hostel. anyway, so, you know, I'm in small classes. Small classes were important to me, so it was important to me that I had this opportunity. I'm living with the people I'm taking classes with. I eat with those people. I meet with my professors weekly.
Wow.
So, you know, and there are different programs that are a little bit different. Ones that are a little more hands-on, ones that are a little bit, you know, hands-off. But those are all possibilities to look into once you get into a college.
And what's good, and at Duke, they keep you all on the same campus.
Yeah, freshmen are on our own campus. We have East Campus, and the upperclassmen have West Campus. So it's a nice way to just, you know, get us, it eases us in a little bit.
You get shuttled into your classes,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, we get...
They do let you off the East Campus.
Yeah, we can get on buses. But, you know, you're babied a little bit freshman year, which, and I think it's okay to be babied. I think we just need to get over ourselves.
I think it's nice to keep them all there, and then, you know, they hang out in the quad together, and that was just kind of what I observed.
Well, so. The beautiful thing is that when they got Stormy, they knew who they were getting because of her application. I mean, what they're looking for is choosing people who are going to actually thrive on their campus.
Yeah, and a word to everyone is, like, you know, when you're writing your application, like, these people actually care. I know for me, the person who admitted me actually called me and had a phone conversation with me about my essay. So know that they do care. You're not, you know, they are looking to fill their campus with people that they want to be around and they want to know what you're like. So it's not just some person who's, you know, waiting to say no, you know, they want to know you.
And they want to know who you are now. I mean, I find a lot of kids, what they're not trained to do anymore is how they need to brag. They can't be modest.
And that's the thing. Okay, so that's a good question. That brings us to a good point. How much do you brag before you just start to sound obnoxious on your application? Because some of these kids, because nowadays, I mean, come on, you have these super kids who are, you know, I mean, you know, AP students, and they're on every team and every, you know, charitable organization. And so you how much... do you brag, Melanie?
I don't encourage students to brag necessarily, but when it comes to their essays and their, I want them to tell the school about themselves. I want the school to have a good picture of what this student is like, and you do that by showing, not telling, giving details of activities. Without coming out and say, hey, you know, I'm a real compassionate person, I want the student to talk about, for example, what he does in his life that demonstrates that he's compassionate. So it's not bragging, but it's telling the story of that student.
But for a lot of them, they think it is. I mean, psychologically, they said, well, but I'm telling them, who else? They don't read minds. They're never going to know this about you unless you choose what are the key qualities that you offer a college. I mean, when I met Stormy, we met in a coffee shop.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were actually helping someone else.
I was helping somebody else.
She came over to me, she's like, oh, are you working on the Common App? I'm like, why, yes, I am.
But what Stormy needed to do in her essays was actually tell the specific story of an experience, because they can't figure it out themselves. And so she had to let them know that this is the kind of person I am, and this story actually reveals why I'm this kind of person.
Right.
But you have to be willing to tell a story that you're not embarrassed to tell, that other people are going to see, but they're going to move people to want to actually get to know you and meet you.
And how much do you do to prepare during the high school year? So do you recommend that a child, you know, pick a few things and stay focused on those, you know, consistently? Or do you try to do everything? Do you try to sort of, you know, get involved and get your hand in everything so that you seem that that you're heavily involved?
I think generally, Rebecca, don't you agree that to try and just do a few activities consistently over the course of the high school career
is what's better? I mean, there's not enough time in the day for them to do all the stuff they need to do anyway, so
right.
I always encourage them just to do things they like. but schools are interested in consistency and development.
Okay, well, thank you so much. We are out of time, if you can believe it, yes. Thank you so much, Melanie Rome, Rebecca Joseph, Betty Alkazian, and my daughter Stormy. For any information, log on to mommywood.com, MOMMYWOOD. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Not a word I say, I may be converted and glue a melted candy bar. Style is a fantasy, I dream of accessories, but baby underneath.